Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Saints Hour. This is Mike Haas, and we'll be joined in just a minute by Jeff Nowak, talking all things Saints and the Denver Broncos. And a special treat for the second half hour tonight as we go deep inside the Denver Broncos huddle with Lionel Bienvenu from Denver 7. The name will sound familiar to a lot because he worked at WVUE for many years before heading to the West Coast initially, and then has been at Denver 7 since 2001. So, wow, 23 years. So we'll get kind of the latest insight from the Broncos side of things as they lost on Sunday at home as well. They are 3-3 with Sean Payton coming in. And the Saints, as we know, also lost at home on Sunday to the Buccaneers. So two divisional games for each team. And it's a short week. The Saints don't have to travel. Denver does, but let me tell you, the walking wounded. Jeff Nowak, sideline reporter, joined us. And Jeff, we could actually go down the entire injury list, and that would pretty much be the show. I guess it just seems, and it's like this every week to me, and it started in the Atlanta game when the Saints had like 14 and Atlanta had the offensive linemen. They had like one guy, right? And, you know, the Saints have 17, and Denver has really one guy, Patrick Surtain, who's not going to play because of a concussion. So I guess give me the highlights, if you will, of this injury list and really where it's going to be most impactful.
Yeah, so, I mean, the guys who aren't practicing this week, several of them we knew about, right? So it's guys that have already been out, which you have Cesar Ruiz, he's been out since week 4, Derek Carr, we knew he was going to miss at least one game, probably more than one game. So at least two games, probably more than two games, I should say. Then you have Pete Werner, who's going to be missing, I guess, his third consecutive game. That's a problem. But then it's the wide receivers that are the most concerning, right? So you have Chris Olave, who's still in that concussion protocol. It's almost a guarantee that he's not going to play. I don't even know if it'd be possible for him to clear concussion protocol at this point. And then Rashid Shaheed, who's dealing with a knee injury that sounds reasonably significant. So it's highly likely that on Thursday night, you're going to start a rookie quarterback without either of his two top wide receivers, without any of your starting interior offensive line, with a banged up Alvin Kamara, with Taysom Hill maybe there. He's been limited in practice the last 2 days. I'd be surprised if he goes. I do wonder if maybe they're just trying to force, you know, the Broncos to have to account for him a little bit, because I didn't see him when we were out there for the media portion today. I didn't see him out there, so I don't know how much work he's getting in. It's a problem. The good news is you got Lucas Patrick back in a limited capacity. If he can go, then you would at least have one of your starting interior linemen out there. It's ugly.
So let's assume, for the sake of this conversation, that Patrick is able to go, and he was a game time decision for Tampa. He probably goes back to center, right? Keep Saldivari at left guard and keep Landon Young at right guard, or do you keep Connor McGovern at center and Patrick at left guard where he's been?
I would guess you keep Connor McGovern at center and you put Lucas Patrick at left guard. You could go any way you want. I just kind of like the idea of, hey, if I can have one of my players at the position they're supposed to be at, okay, I'm happy about it. I feel like Connor McGovern has played pretty well, reasonably speaking. I've said this since the start. I think Lucas is a better left guard than he is a center. You could start him at either position, but I think he's better at left guard. And plus, Spencer has played a game with Connor at center, right? I feel like at a certain point, you just would prefer continuity than anything else, right? So if you can at least get those two together for a second game, I feel better about that. So that would be my guess. If he's able to go, you get him at left guard. But I don't think there's any guarantee that he's able to go. So it's going to be a question. But, you know, it's a lot of it's going to come down to what can Spencer get done under those circumstances? Because you're going to have to score points to win. And the Broncos' defense has been very, very formidable. And Vance Joseph is going to he's going to throw the kitchen sink at Spencer to some extent and see what he can handle. That offensive line has been a problem.
And then so we really, we need to look at the practice squad to start figuring out from a wide receiver standpoint. The Saints today did sign Dante Pettis, 2018 second-round pick, 6 years out of Washington. So they signed him to the practice squad. You've got Equanimeous St. Brown. You've got Kevin Austin and Jermaine Jackson. So let's – and then you got to start thinking, all right, who's going to return punts? Who's going to return kicks? Assuming, right. This is all, you know, under the assumption that Shaheed doesn't go. Now, the only – if you're looking for that glass half full, these are the guys that – Spencer Rattler threw to in Irvine, right? I mean, these are the guys that he's been practicing with up until the most recent week. So, you know, so like Bub Means, right? I mean, that's, you know, they have a connection. That's who he practices with.
Yeah, that is, I think that does qualify as a glass half full way of looking at it for sure. It reminded me of, I can't remember, it was when Trevor Siemian took over and he threw a touchdown to Alex Arma. I can't remember if it was against Tampa Bay, and I remember asking Sean Payton at the time, and I was like, well, do you think maybe Trevor is just, more comfortable throwing to Alex Arma because he spent time on the practice squad, and that's who he reps with? And I think his response was, yeah, I don't think anyone's more comfortable throwing to Alex Arma, who's the fullback at the time. And I think that's true to some extent. It's like, hey, you have your starters, you have your star players for a reason. You would much rather have them out there. You would much rather be Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed. But I do think that what you saw with Bub Means last week was not a coincidence, right? Those two guys felt very comfortable together. Spencer felt very comfortable going to him in tight windows. The most impressive throw of the day wasn't even the touchdown. It was the third down conversion on the sideline where the play was kind of dead. And Bub just kind of Spencer extended. Bub saw him, kind of found some space, and they were able to convert. And I think that's just the subtle nuances of playing quarterback receiver at the NFL level that, you know, you can't just pick up and play like that on day one, right? Like, you have to kind of build that connection. I think there is something to that. Again, you would much rather have, Chris Olave out there. But, I think that you can use that to your advantage to some extent. I wouldn't be surprised if this is a week you bring up maybe Jermaine Jackson, just because you want that extra comfortability returning kicks, because I don't know who you're going to have. The bigger question to me is punts. I know a lot of people on the Saints roster have worked at the kick return, and you had them kind of cycling in for that exact reason throughout camp. I don't know who you trust necessarily to field punts, and that can get really ugly really quickly if the person back there is uncomfortable, if you're not comfortable with the person back there. So that's my biggest question, is who ends up fielding punts on this team. And if you don't feel comfortable with anyone up there, maybe it is Jermaine Jackson.
What about Cedric Wilson? I always felt it like that he was kind of that person, even
he
though
was.
I know they had the fumble early. I just don't know. Is that it? That's it. You don't get another chance. I don't know. I mean, there's so many options.
But that's what I mean. Like, you know, Cedric Wilson is a guy that worked at punt return in camp, but I know he struggled against the 49ers. There was at least two punts that he should have fielded that he didn't. He let him bounce. He got pinned inside your five. Against the Panthers, there was a punt that he put on the ground. So I don't know how you would look at Cedric and be like, oh, this is the guy we're comfortable with. If you had to put him back there, sure, he can do it. But you're not exactly at it. It's no longer a position of strength. Like, we just watched Rashid Shaheed return a punt to the house. You gain an advantage when he is back there. I don't know how you gain, you probably lose an advantage. You're probably at a disadvantage now just because of the question mark.
Right. No, he's a tough guy to replace, and apples to apples. Take a break. We'll come back, talk more with Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak. This is the Saints Hour here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back to the Saints Hour. Mike Haas along with Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak. And I know we'll probably lean more towards Denver, but there's some things defensively and offensively that I want to kind of discuss. And you don't have to, you can sit back for a couple of seconds here and just chill, because it's going to take me a little bit of time. So, and it kind of starts out defensively, but it's also defense and offense. All right. So third quarter, Tampa Bay. Saints are on top, 27-24. They get the ball, drive down to the 35. So that's a 53-yarder. It's the third down. It's the pass. They thought it might be a fumble, but they ruled it incomplete. But you still got the face mask on Connor McGovern. So you drive all the way down there, but you end up punting, right? So you don't really kind of get the momentum. You punt, you pin them back to the 8. Tampa doesn't do anything. They punt to you. Great field position. New Orleans 47. Sack. You punt it again to their 8. You have pinned them twice inside the 10, and the second time they get a touchdown. So just hold that for a second. So you've had two great opportunities, good field position. You pinned them back to the 8. You got 0 points. They got 7. Go back to the Atlanta game. You pinned Atlanta at the 12, the 10, the 19, the 7, the 30. And out of that, they got field goal, punt, field goal. 6 possessions of the 30 and inside, mostly inside the 12. And the opponent got 4 scores, 3 field goals, and a touchdown. Where am I going? I'm going, this is the drive where it ends. It's the 2nd and 5. You pin Tampa back. They get it at their own 45, and they throw this pass to Godwin that he takes 55 yards for the score, the worst tackling of the game on that play, and it never got better, right? It just seemed like that play, and it should not be the backbreaker, and it wasn't, but from that moment, tackling became such a huge issue. And when you, my other point is that when you can back teams up, that is when this defense has to shine, because you've got Rashid Shaheed. If he catches the ball at the 40, his own 40 to 45, man, he's in territory within seconds, and he brought it back for a touchdown. That is when this defense has to be at its best, and that is when it has not been at its best.
Well, I mean, let me stop you. So what happened in the second quarter, right? Like, that's how you were able to get back in the game, because you took advantage of those situations. Right?
Right.
You backed up the Bucs. They got themselves into trouble with penalties. Rashid Shaheed's kick return or punt return touchdown. I can't remember. Kamara was punting with his heels at the back of the end zone, right?
Yep.
Like, the 2 interceptions were thrown deep in Bucs territory. When you get teams back up like that, they either play conservative or, you know, they try to make something happen, and that's advantage you. So, I mean, yeah, you saw both sides of that coin in that game where, hey, when you take advantage of those situations, you make life easier on your offense, especially an undermanned offense with a rookie quarterback, you give them a chance. When you allow long drives out of those situations, that's how you end up being number 32 out of 32 teams in terms of total yards allowed, right?
And that's right. Why
you end up losing the time of possession battle. I think you could say the same thing about the Chiefs. The Chiefs had several long drives in that game.
Oh, my gosh. I think they had like 84 plays. Like, it was crazy.
Right. That's how you end up losing the time of possession battle by 20 minutes in a 60-minute game. But, no, the missed tackles, and it's – honestly, like, you could say, hey, they need to do more tackling drills. They need to do whatever. These guys know how to tackle. These are not all, you know, rookie players. Willie Gay knows how to tackle, right? Alante Taylor knows how to tackle. It's just they're getting out of their – I think everyone's trying to play hero ball a little bit.
No, I agree.
Especially in that moment. You're trying to make something happen because you know, hey, this is how we got back into the game. We forced some turnovers. Willie kind of outran himself on that play. If you go back and watch, I mean, if all he does is kind of funnel Chris Godwin to the sideline, if he just kind of leverages him inside and forces him to get to that boundary, someone's going to come up and make the tackle. Instead, he kind of gets too far outside. – And Joe Woods kind of said it today. It's a cutback league. Everyone's always trying to cut back because the athleticism is too good. And you can't allow someone an open run into the middle of the field.
Right.
The Saints' top 5 tacklers in that game were defensive backs.
Yeah.
Think about that.
I
get that you play a lot of nickel. I get that you play a lot of nickel, but that's crazy. It's a problem, but it's not a problem of like, hey, these guys can't physically tackle. They know how to tackle. They're capable of tackling. I think it's a mental thing. I really do. And I think you kind of just have to straighten that out. I hope there's been some uncomfortable conversations in that room. I hope that people are getting taken to task for the mistakes that they're making, because that's what they are. It's not a talent issue. It's not a question of physically being able to do it. It's a question of, hey, there's a tackle to be made in front of you. You got to go make it right now. If all the Saints did in that game was make the tackles in front of them, I don't know if they win it, but it's a much closer game.
Right, because the Godwin play is kind of what you wanted. He was checking down, right? You got them to do what you wanted on a second and five, threw a check down in the flat, and it ends up being 55 yards. Now, the inability to stop the run, we can talk about, we'll talk about the ability to run the ball where the Saints have struggled. I mean, you know, I think things, you know, it just got out of control against Tampa. I mean, Sean Tucker had two carries.
You mean future Hall of Famer, Sean Tucker?
Right. Two carries for 7 yards and one reception for 14 coming into the game. You know, and then they have, you know, they're so balanced. 14, 136, Irving, 14, 81, Shepard, 4 for 31. I mean, you know, their average per carry and the explosive plays, right? I mean, just the explosive plays has hurt this defense so terribly. But let's flip it a little bit. So offensively, and you know, beyond Alvin, and I think, judging from what we heard from Mickey last night, we will see Kendre Miller Thursday. I think he'll be on a pitch count, but I mean, it's been a long time since when it was at July 22nd in Irvine, California, right? To see that kid on the field. And so you wonder how this offense is going to run better, but you feel like maybe it's if Taysom does come back to some degree. I don't know, but you feel like if they've got to do that's what I've never heard Deuce in the booth say, stop running that play, that inside run in the middle. He's like, stop running that play. It was tough sledding.
Yeah, well, so for Kendre, I don't even know if pitch count is the right word. I think it's more like a how many trust falls will you do before you stop having faith that someone's going to catch you? Because it's not, I don't think it's a physical thing for him. I think he is healthy enough to play. It's more just, okay, what do you trust him to do? How much do you trust him to do in the offense? Do you trust him to pass protect? Because if you don't, then he's not going to be in on those plays, right? And Jamal Williams' usage has been a bit baffling to me. I think his offensive snap count has basically gone down week over week over week over week. He had 3 offensive snaps in that game, which I don't know. I really don't understand in a game where you want to take some of the heat off of Alvin and he's banged up. You can't get him in there. But no, I think you got to find ways to manufacture offense. And you saw the Saints try to get a little creative with Spencer. They got him out of the pocket a good bit. The reason those boots stopped working, it's not that, you know, he ran them poorly. It's that, you know, in large part because the linebackers for the Bucs stopped respecting the run. Like, that boot works because it's a play action, and then you boot away from it. But the linebackers typically will have to hold in the middle of the field. At some point in the second half, you saw Lavonte David just start getting wide at the snap because he knew that, okay, this is not going to get handed off. It's going to boot back, and I'm going to take it away. And, you know, so the issue is you can't run the ball. You can't keep them honest on defense so that your boot game will work. They're sending a lot of green dog pressure. I know Deuce talks about this a lot. It's basically, hey, you have an assignment in coverage. If that guy stays in the block, I'm blitzing, right? And so that's how you were able to generate some extra pressure because the Saints have to keep guys in the block. So, not being able to run the ball has been very, very problematic for this team. And it's tough to see how that improves because you are so undermanned on the offensive line. You were able to get the tight ends involved in the passing game, which was nice. I think that helped open up some things that, you know, the best drive of the game, you hit Foster Moreau with a 40-yard pass play down the middle of the field, something we have not seen at all over the first 5 weeks of the season, right? The tight end getting downfield, it's amazing.
Right, a seam route with Jimmy Graham doing the hoot at chant. It was perfect.
Right. No, but I mean, if you can do stuff like that more and you can kind of, it's like a can opener in the middle of the field. That'll make life easier. You got to be able to get that wide zone run going. I don't know. It's tough because I know Alvin is banged up. I don't know how much that's affecting him, but I thought that game in particular, he looked slow in that game. And he just never was able to get space. I know he's dealing with a hand injury. He had like 3 drops, so maybe that affected him. I think Spencer might need to learn, you know, get a little better at touch passes. You know, I think sometimes he just puts too much heat on the ball. But obviously you're out there, you got to catch the ball. But yeah, you got to execute. You got to do the little things, the simple things, and then the big things will come for you.
Need to take another break. We're talking with Jeff Nowak, Saints sideline reporter. This is the Saints Hour. We are back after this on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back to the Saints Hour. Mike Haas along with Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak. And a little later in this show, we're going to be joined by Denver 7's Lionel Bienvenu. Been covering Denver sports since 2001. He was at WVUE, Fox 8, born in Maryland, but basically grew up here in New Orleans, and looking forward to talking to him. So rookie versus rookie, Bo Nix has had just an interesting kind of start. They're 3-3, are Denver. So he had two interceptions in each of his first 2 weeks, but yet just one interception in his last four games. He had zero touchdowns in his first three games, but he's had five touchdowns passing in his last three, also rushing for three touchdowns in the six games. And all you have to do is look at this up and down is look at the Jets game when he was 12 of 25 for 60 yards, one touchdown, and won the game as they beat the Jets 10-9. I mean, I watched the Chargers game, and I'm, you know, this is a great, I mean, Denver's defense is pretty stout, right? But offensively, they're certainly playing better of late, but I mean, just give me your just take of the Denver offense and Bo Nix.
Yeah, so, you know, I'd like to think that the Saints can stop Javonte Williams, and if they can, and I feel good about the matchup, but I can't confidently say they'll be able to stop the run game. But no, I mean, it is, you know, the Saints, you look at it like, okay, the Saints defense has struggled. They've gone against four very good quarterbacks over the last 4 weeks, right? Like, you're talking about Jalen Hurts, Kirk Cousins, Pat Mahomes, Baker Mayfield. And, like, that's a difficult run of quarterbacks. Not everyone has a quarterback like that in the NFL. And one of the quarterbacks who is not that is Bo Nix. He's going to walk into the Superdome for the first time. He's going to be playing on a short week for the first time. That should be advantage Saints. Now, obviously, the Saints have the same question on their offense with Spencer Rattler. He's never played in a Thursday night game. He's never had to prepare for a game in 3 days. So, you know, both defenses, I think, are going to tee off to some extent. The Saints' defense needs to be able to shut down the Broncos' offense. How much can Sean Payton install in 3 days? I actually think the Saints are getting off lucky in this matchup, having it be on a Thursday, because if you gave Sean a full week to prepare, I have a feeling he'd be pulling out all the stops and trying to do basically like what the Lions did to the Cowboys last week with all the trick plays and linemen catching touchdowns, basically just trying to embarrass them. I don't think you're going to be able to do that if you're Sean Payton this week. Darren Rizzi actually had a funny comment today. He was like, hey, at least we don't have to worry about an ambush punt. And you can thank Darren for that, because the ambush punt no longer exists because of the rule change that he championed and changing the kickoff format. So they at least don't have to worry about any surprise onside kicks. But I feel pretty good about it. I think this is a game that the Saints should be kind of prideful in. Like, I think Thursday night football often comes down to, like, okay, who wants it more, right? Who wants to go out there and grit through it? You're going to be sore. You're going to be tired. There's no way you have recovered from the game you played on Sunday. Who wants it? Right? Who wants to go out there and have some pride? And if the Saints want this season to go the way they want it to go, that's how they've got to be. They have a lot more riding on this game than the Broncos do. And, you know, I don't think, you know, the Broncos roster is going to be super emboldened by, oh, it's Sean's revenge game. Like, the Saints roster should be the one feeling like, hey, we want to put a statement win out there. So, I don't know. I'd like to think that they can go out there and you know, exercise some of these demons a little bit.
Yeah, it's so important. You don't want to get into a five-game losing streak. You have a mini bye after this where you go on the road to take on the Chargers. And, you know, watching Bo Nix against the Chargers, ironically. So, I mean, it's so much different than like a Mahomes or a Baker where he's running to extend plays. Bo Nix is running for his life, right? He was running for his life. Now, I will say that by the end of the game, I had a much different feeling about his elusiveness and his ability to avoid. He's a pretty good athlete. He may be running for his life, but he did a pretty good job of doing just that. He's not doing it like Mahomes and Mayfield, but that'll be a different situation. But you're right, it's like, because you've got – it's three games in 11 days. That's just wrong. Whatever. It is what it is. But now you've got this game you're right, that probably is far more important to the Saints and Sean Payton's return and all of that. But then you've got this break. And if you can get this win and get to 3-4 and get healthy, we've always said the second half of the season is kind of where it is. And I think really we don't often talk about the opposing team's defense of a 3-3 team, but it's Vance Joseph, right? Marrero native. I mean, they've only given up. They're fourth in the league in points, 16, fifth in the league passing. I mean, they're tops on fourth down. They're tops in the red zone. I mean, that's the reason, kind of where they are.
Yeah, and I mean, I think LSU fans, if you remember those LSU-Auburn matchups back when Bo Nix was at Auburn, like he scrambled a lot in those games. And I remember just being like, yeah, they can't get into the ground. He's not the most athletic guy in the world, but he can extend plays. And we've seen the Saints struggle with that. So it definitely is something to be a little concerned about. But I don't have as much concern about him making plays downfield as I did with Baker and Pat. You know, the interesting thing, it's like the third or fourth time the Saints have been able to scout both of their next upcoming opponents
right.
in one game
yeah.
the week before they played them, which is kind of crazy. But the other thing that I think is notable is, hey, one of the difficulties the Saints faced this week was they had a short week. They went on the road, faced Kansas City, came back, and had to host a team that was on 10 days rest. So not only were you on a short week, you were going against a team with extra rest. Well, the Saints next week, they get that luxury. The Chargers this week are going on the road for Monday Night Football and then hosting a Saints team on 10 days rest. So you should feel like you have the advantage in that matchup. And I think, hey, if you can find a way to win this game, and you can then take advantage of that rest, get some players healthy, get some players back, go out there and beat a Chargers team that I don't think is built to win right now, then you're right back where you need to be. You're 4-4 with a very favorable schedule in hand over the final half of the season. So you're right there. Like, it's easy to look at this and look at a 51-27 loss and say, it's over. Like, everything's done. But everything is still right in front of you. You just have to go out and string some wins together. That's what good teams do. Good teams don't win, lose, win, lose, win, lose. Good teams, maybe they got off to a rocky start, but then they string 4, 5, 6 wins together, and suddenly you're looking at double-digit wins. That's what all those Saints playoffs teams from 2017 to 2020 did. Every one of those teams had a win streak of 6 or more games. And so that's what you've got to do. You've got to find ways to win close games and string some wins together, and then you're going to be where you want to be. Good teams win consecutive games. Bad teams lose consecutive games. And at some point, you got to decide what you are.
So when the Broncos take the field and people grab their playbook or their game book and they see Malcolm Roach, Jordan Jackson, Will Lutz, Lil Jordan Humphrey,
yeah.
Adam Trautman, Lucas Kroll on the practice squad, A.T. Perry, Quan Alexander, Calvin Throckmorton. I think that's all. I'm not 100% sure. That's a lot of familiar names.
The Saints, I mean, the Broncos might have more former Saints from the Sean Payton era than the Saints have from the Sean Payton era. I haven't actually gone and counted, but I imagine it's pretty close.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. You're right. So just final thoughts, and we'll let you go. I guess it has been a short week. You couldn't have kind of tackled worse in that second half. You came back in that second quarter, and it just felt like it all eroded so quickly because of Tampa is kind of what we just talked about. Tampa played Thursday against Atlanta. Then they played the Saints. Then they got not only they got a Monday night game. So they've had like 3 games in 19 days. The Saints have had 3 games in 11 days. It is what it is, but if you had to say the most important thing for the Saints offense for them to be successful Thursday night to get this thing back on track, what would that be?
Oh, I mean, you got to run the ball. There's no way around it. You got to find a way to run the ball. I don't know. I don't know if you can manufacture it somehow. It's got to happen for you. Like, you got to do it. That's why I was a little bummed that Kendre wasn't active, because I just think he's just going to have a burst that I don't know if you're seeing from Alvin right now. And so I'd like to see him get some touches early in that game, see if he can't make an impact and get the Broncos on their heels a little bit. The other thing I'd say is, play from ahead. I'm tired of watching this Saints team play from behind. I need to see them play from ahead, just take control of a game and play the game on your terms, right? When you're down 17 to nothing, the idea of playing a game on your terms, that's out the window, right? When you're giving up free touchdowns on punts that, you know, you should have your offense on the field, instead you're down 7-0, you're playing the game on their terms, right? I want to see the Saints play this game on their terms. You dictate how this game is going to go, and I think you can go win a game.
And finally, we didn't really talk about him. I mean, I always felt like Sunday, like Spencer Rattler's going, wait, what? 14-0? Wait, what? I mean, he threw a pass complete, and then he threw the pass to Olave, fumble, return, touchdown, and then the defense had given up the touchdown. He's like, wait, what happened? What? How do you feel he – what does he have to do to progress and not really be that – the second half where clearly Tampa made the adjustments, what does he have to do to better lead this offense?
I think he needs to be more comfortable in the pocket. I think he needs to be more comfortable kind of navigating in the pocket and extending plays inside the pocket while keeping his eyes downfield. Like, I think young players, a lot of times it's either or. It's not like, I'm going to use my legs to my advantage. It's either I'm going to stay in the pocket and stay in the field, or I'm going to run. I'm not going to kind of, like, what does Pat Mahomes do that makes life so difficult on defense? He's not just running the ball. He's extending. He's making guys miss and then finding guys downfield and forcing the defense to cover. That's what I want Spencer to do a little bit more. It doesn't always have to be a designed rollout. I just need him to kind of be comfortable navigating in the pocket. But when you just talked about it, one of the things that I gained the most confidence from in watching him was he was staring down a 17-0 deficit. He had lost his star wide receiver on the second offensive play or the third offensive play, and he stayed calm. He didn't panic. He didn't, you know, the turnovers at the end of the game, you know, they caught him a little bit. He underthrew a ball that should have kind of led Rashid upfield. You know, it's something you'll learn from. He didn't see the safety on the other interception. But he was able in that second quarter to kind of lock in, lead some drives, and end up giving you a lead at halftime. And, you know, that's not easy to do. Like, that game could have spiraled really early if he kind of got overwhelmed in that moment. He didn't. So I think that bodes well for him. I think that's something that you can really look at and build on. And ideally, in a game where not everything goes terribly for you in the first 5 minutes, you can have a little bit of an advantage from that. But no, I think that, you know, you need to keep building if you're Spencer. You need to look at what you did poorly and improve on those things, right? But I think that was a good start for him, and it was just unfortunate because it was in a game that you really, you know, it didn't feel like you could afford to lose. But you had a rookie playing like a rookie, but showing some really positive signs. And hopefully, you know, in try number two, you can erase some of those negatives and add some more positives.
We shall see. We will find out if the list gets any better tomorrow. Jeff Nowak, we appreciate your time as always. Thank you, my friend.
Sure, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
You bet.